Hello and welcome to Taskmaster Talk. Kevin Sullivan, I'm your host, JP John Bond, the two-man power trip. And of course, joining me is the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the 83 weeks of dominance, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing excellent. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing very good. What do you think about what's going on lately in the crazy world of WWE? Vince McMahon, the payments are up to $20 million, and I believe it's seven women now.
How many women is it up to now? You kind of broke up on me.
Seven, I believe.
I think there'll end up being more people be coming out of the woodwork once they find out that this money is being distributed, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. What do you think about all this that's going on, though? Like, they keep finding more and more. I mean, if they go back many years, God knows how much they're going to find.
Well, I think it's like anything else. More people are coming forward, and maybe people that had not forgot about the problem, but forgot about doing anything or trying to put it aside, are now going to come forward. I think that this is going to get more heated as the weeks and months go by. What's your take on it?
I feel like you're right. Like, it's Pandora's box. We've only just begun. It feels like it was, at first it was 10 million, then it was 12, then it was 15, now it's 20, and they haven't even gone through everything yet. I feel like this has only just begun.
It's funny, though, haven't their ratings gone up and haven't their pay-per-views gone up since this has happened?
I don't know about the pay-per-views because I don't know how they track it with Peacock, but the ratings are way up. Raw last week, I think, did 2.3 million, and they haven't done that. They haven't touched that in over 2 years. SmackDown was about where they are normally, which is like 2.2 million. I mean, Friday nights is in the summer. It might be hard, but still, I mean, they did pretty well. It just seems like more interest, controversy is creating some cash here.
Right, right. And, you know, I think, too, about ratings being up, and maybe more eyes are going on the product. Obviously, they are if the ratings up. That the Flair thing helped the wrestling world, made people turn into the wrestling world. Because I saw the week, you know, before the show, he gave a speech to the Tennessee Titans, was followed by all the news. So there's been a lot of stuff that have kind of woken up people that have maybe not watched wrestling for a while. So, you know, I'm going to go back and take a look at the shows now. So, I'm sorry it happened in a sort of a negative way. I wish it happened in a positive way. But, you know, Brock and Roman, wasn't this the fifth pay-per-view?
Oh, at least.
Together?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, and from what I saw, it was pretty. It was more than pretty good. It was very good. And you know, you're asking a lot for guys to work five times on huge pay-per-views. What was your thought on that?
I loved it. I thought that might have been the best match that they've actually had together, surprisingly, because they've had some pretty good ones. But that was really good, very different, very hard-hitting, longer than all the other matches that they've had together, too, the length. Plus the tractor thing, I mean, that just grabbed everybody's attention. That was a great visual, just looked amazing, never seen anything like that before. And then all the way at the end when he dumps all the trash on Lesnar after he knocks him out and he stands on top of the trash, which is on top of Lesnar, that was a great visual as well.
And then Roman catching the mic.
Yes.
he Brock threw it at him. He couldn't have done that if they tried to do it again from the time the match was over till now. It was amazing, huh? Shows you what a great athlete Roman is.
And he gave him a little wink, too, like, hey, gotcha. You know what I mean? That was pretty good. They caught that on camera.
To me, it was very good.
To me, I heard that Lesnar might be retiring, but to me, I think they really need Lesnar. But then I just heard that he's booked for the, I think it's January 1st, day one pay-per-view in 2022. So I guess we won't see Brock for a few months, but I'm glad he's not retired because he's got plenty left in the tank.
Well, who put that out there that he may retire? It'd be a good thing if you were Brock's agent to put that out there because of all the turmoil going up. They need some guy that draws houses and solidifies his money. I think, you know, they could do a lot of stuff. They could come up with some kind of angle where somebody jumps Roman and he goes and asks Brock to be his partner. Or, you know, if they brought that cross in, who I think is excellent, maybe that's the way to get him over, you know, him and another guy. And then they could go off in the singles. But, I mean, that always works, you know, it's usually when the baby face gets beat up and he has to go and ask his number one foe to be his partner. It always works and it always draws money and people aren't sure whether the guy's going to turn or not. So it'd be an opportunity for them to get two younger guys over too.
Big time. That would be pretty cool to see the two big stars, Roman and Lesnar, obviously the two biggest guys that they have teaming together. What do you think, though? Is there other guys out there for Roman to kind of knock off? I mean, who else do you see out there besides Lesnar that's even, you know, on his level?
Well, I mean, it's too bad that Cody got hurt. You know, I don't know how, is it actually he's going to be out the length of time they said? Didn't they say 6 to 8 months?
Yep, and he said his timetable is less. He didn't say exactly what, but he said his personal timetable is less.
Well, he can have a personal timetable. Could be less, but I know about those. and you know about them. Isn't it always when the guy rushes to get back, he gets hurt again, and then hurt again, and he gets hurt again?
Yep.
You know, I know he's itching to get back in there, and I know they need him, but if he gets hurt again, you know, that sometimes makes guys vulnerable to get injured. In baseball, look at Chris Sale, right?
Yeah.
He's like a piece of china now. He keeps him everywhere. From MVP. And he was MVP when he won the Cy Young, right?
I thought so. I know he had a tremendous year that year that he won the Cy Young. I know he was pretty much on fire for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Now he's very frail.
Yeah. So.
I just want to mention with Cody, though, do you see him as the top guy? Do you see him as beating Lesnar? Or beating Roman?
That decision would have to be made with the utmost backing that you knew it was going to work for sure. It's like this way. You remember when we were booing Roman out of the building and Roman sucks? Isn't he the longest tended champion in this generation?
Yep. Over 700 days.
Okay. He's matured in a our viewing audience incredible. He's become the man. You can see it in him. You can almost see that Brock, when he passed the torch, that there was relief from Brock to Roman. And it's almost like, even though the matches are so hard hitting, there's almost like a little dance there, like when he caught the mic, you know, and winked at Roman. Roman winked at Brock. It's like, yeah, I'm the man. Now, if Roman goes off to Hollywood and makes movies, my thought process isn't so... Yeah, if Roman went off and make movies, okay, I'd feel a lot more secure that if Roman was around, so you could go in a program with Rhodes and Roman. Because if Roman goes away, and I'm assuming if Roman's gone away, Brock is gone, right?
Yep.
Who do you put in there, and how do you get him there to the dance to work with Cody? You know?
Yep.
Having a guy like Roman that went through all kinds of adversity to get where he is. And, you know, I remember a few years ago when we were doing this, we were saying, well, people don't think you'll ever get over. Now, people doubt that they ever said that, right?
Yep.
And then his matches with Brock have been hard-hitting and really intense. And who would have thought they'd become allies backstage, you know what I mean? And maybe if Roman takes off for Hollywood, Brock's going to say, I'll take off until he comes back. I need a rest too. Who knows? It's going to be, if he goes and leaves, it's going to be harder for Cody. Who are they going to make? Not saying it's going to be harder for Cody. It's going to be harder for the office to make someone, to get him ready in time enough to work with Cody.
Yep. Funny that, you know, they got Lashley. I mean, they have a couple guys, and maybe Cross maybe eventually, but I don't know if they have guys really that are going to topple Roman. They kind of don't. After Drew, they're kind of running out of and the candidates because Cody's hurt.
Yeah, and I'm really big fan of Cross. I mean, I'm a big fan of his. I don't know why they let him go. And then when they, remember, they brought him up and then they set him off. Then they brought him back up to the main roster and gave him a goofy gimmick like the Eraser Boy. Yep. I think that was done to, he must have got some heat on himself without even knowing it. He crossed somebody and they were trying to embarrass him. And to get rid of him, what is he, 6'4", 260? Looks like $1 million. Has a great gimmick and you want to get rid of him? That had to be a personal issue. I don't understand that. And I think he could work at any era. I really like him. I think he's very, very good.
Me too. And his wife is gorgeous. So, like, her with him makes the package great. He's got a great entrance. He's a good wrestler. I mean, everything about him is great. That was so weird because Triple H said just recently in an interview what they did with Cross the first time around made him sick. He said he had to right that wrong. So, obviously, that pissed Triple H off.
Good. Good for Triple H. Good for Triple H that he saw that. Hats off to him. Aside from, I know that wasn't his decision, but sometimes it's hard to go against the company line and knock the company. Maybe this shows that the company WWE is going to be in great, great hands with Triple H. I certainly hope so.
Do you think he could do it? I mean, these are big shoes to fill with Vince, who, you know, used to work 24/7. His whole life was wrestling. Do you think Triple H can do this? Because he's EVP of talent and he's the head of creative.
Yep, I do think he can do it. because he loves the business. He absolutely loves the business. I think he is the closest thing to Vince, the 24 hours, 7 days a week. I think he thinks wrestling angles all the time. He has friends. Yeah, he's, besides being a huge wrestling fan, loving the wrestling business, he has a lot of friends that are very smart. And they love the business, whether it's Hunter and Sean, or Hunter and Kevin, or Hunter and X-Pac, or whoever. His friends are wrestling people. And so I think he's got a very good chance. And I think, like anything else, how many years did Vince have it? 40?
Yep.
I mean, right? 40 years. He did an incredible job, but it's time for a little bit of fresh air in there. I think Hunter's going to do a great job.
So with that, I think we should talk about Johnny H. just for a second before we get into the topic at hand. What did you think about the firing of Johnny Ace? He's officially been terminated.
Well, you know, sometimes I don't know, and you may know more than I don't know what the background story is. It isn't clear to me yet why they fired. I mean, what was the reason why he was fired?
They're saying that he had some sexual misconduct allegations against him, and that he also had hush money payments.
Okay, so all this stuff was hidden, and for how many years, and now it's opened up again? So
yep.
He was guilty before going to court. He was guilty in public appeals.
Yeah,
so maybe they have something on him completely that he actually wanted to step aside, but this is a whole different era, and things that were okay back in the day are not right anymore, and rightfully so.
Definitely. This is the new, you know, woke era. But I mean, the good old boys club, you know, that's gone. That's not happening anymore. They're not going to be able to get away with some of the stuff that they've gotten away with before. I mean, there's no doubt about that, right?
Right, right.
Were you friendly with Johnny Ace at all? I know you had mentioned, obviously, you guys worked together, but were you friendly at all with him?
Yeah, I was friendly with Johnny. I mean, I knew him when he first started. He was the flag bearer for the sheep herders who became the Bushwhackers. I remember when they gave him, Jim Herd gave him and Shane Douglas the Dynamic Dudes, which was a horrible gimmick for them to take. And then I would run into Johnny in Florida when he was going back and forth to Japan. I always got along and good with him. He was always nice to me.
When was the last time you spoke to him? About 20 years ago when they tried to hire you for the WWE?
Yeah, that was about it. Yeah, 20 years ago.
Wow.
We had a great run there.
Yeah, I was going to say, crazy to think how long, if you look back, I mean, how long he was actually there for.
Right, right. Yeah, great run.
So sorry.
No, and he also had a great run for Mrs. Baba.
Oh, yeah, true. Yes.
Big very time. True. Big money they were making. Big money he was making. So
he's one of those guys. Yeah, it's one of those guys that always did well, kind of no matter where he went. I mean, obviously, he was very successful in All Japan, 20-plus years in WWE. I mean, it's pretty good.
Absolutely, and he must have did 10 years in All Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was there when Bob was alive. Yeah.
supposedly one of the best road agents, but producers of matches. You know, obviously he knew talent relations. He kind of was a guy with many hats. He knew a lot of jobs. He could do a lot of things.
Right, right.
So now let's finally get to the topic at hand. That is WCW, your favorite. WCW Road Wild 1999, which was held on August 14th. Sturgis Rally, Sturgis, South Dakota, technically known as the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. And the attendance, which we always laugh about, they put it out there. Meltzer put it out there, 5,500. How do you know the attendance? I even saw a picture. I looked at a picture of it. There's no way. It's more than 5,500, way more than 5,500. But there's no way to tell how many people are actually, no way to count. There's not a chance.
I wonder how Dave came up with that, too.
You think he was asking Zane or something? Like, I'm always curious, like, because we've joked about this before when we talk about other Road Wild. Like, there's no way that number is accurate.
No, but it could be right. You know, like you said, there's no way to find out, but it could be right. Meaning he's just plucking the number out, right?
Right.
And there are, what do they draw? 400,000 people for Bike Week?
Yes. Yep.
So I don't know how you decide what number it is. And I don't even think they actually paid to get in, did they?
No, free.
Yeah. So, pretty crazy. I don't think there's a way to get an attendance figure unless, like you said, Zane gave Meltzer the number that he thought it was. Maybe he had an idea how to do it. So,
yeah, very interesting. The tagline here, it'll take more than attitude to ride out of here, and the pay-per-view buys 235K. So when you guys are kind of headed downhill, Hogan comes back on the pay-per-view scene, and it goes back above 200,000, goes to 235. So Hogan being on this card, whether people liked him or not at this point, it helped.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the bike people had an affinity for Hogan. Do you know what I mean? He drew in Oakland. He drew in Daytona. He drew in Sturgis. He actually drew in New Hampshire on the coast where, you know, the Nashua big rally is. So for some reason, people came out to see that were interested in Hogan, that were also interested in motorcycles.
Do you think that they only know Hogan? You know what I mean? Like those fans?
That's a good question. I'm not sure, but you may be right. And, you know, if you read motorcycle magazines, there was always somebody built Hogan a bike, or you know what I mean? He had that Golden Eagle built specially for him by the guy that does the choppers now. What was the guy that played in Oz that was the president of the Hell's Angel chapter in New York? Zito.
Oh, Chuck Zito.
Yeah. He was always friends with Hogan. So I think that worked. That's how people knew Hogan. So, yeah, I think that if they knew other wrestlers, that Hogan was by far the most popular for them.
To me, it's like he's one of the only guys, which is crazy because there's so many big names on here. He's one of the very few guys that actually will get like a reaction from the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether that's good or bad, I think it probably would lean towards bad because, you know what I mean? You're going to an audience where they don't know most of the wrestlers. Like, that can't be good, right?
Right, right. And plus, you're doing it outside in the daytime. It takes away from the ambiance of the matches, I think.
With, you know, this show, obviously, Do you think that there was some way to charge for tickets, or there should have been a way to charge for tickets and not do the free show? Because, you know, Bischoff says, oh, they had branding, they had this, and, you know, they're a part of Bike Week. It's a huge thing, but, you know, you're not making any money on the gate.
Yeah, but I don't think people would have come. They were there. It was right on the main street, right? People were going in and out. It was outside. I question whether someone sat there for all the matches. A few did, but most of them were going in and out, going to the bar, going to see another motorcycle attraction or something else.
Do you think that this is like a good idea just in general? You think the positives outweigh the negatives with doing this show?
Yeah, because I think they were really trying to solidify I was going to say national, and I was going to say international at the same time. It might have been trying to get an international contract with Harley Davidson, because they pushed for that pretty hard, and I thought they were going to get a huge advertising deal with them.
How come it never came to fruition?
You know, that would have to go to the North Tower, because they're the ones that did the bulk of the advertising revenue. So I don't know how that didn't transpire. I'm sure Eric had it ready to be done, and he passed it off, and they dropped the ball.
Because I know that there's obviously other other sponsors that you guys do get, like Valvoline and, you know, a couple other, the smaller ones, just not the big one like Harley Davidson.
Right. So I think that, so I was going to guess that, I think that Harley and Davidson and the people who had talked to Eric had it ready to go. He hands it off, and something transpired that wasn't in Eric's hands, and it fell flat. They let Eric do it, they probably would have got the contract they wanted.
Do you think that Eric loved this? Because, you know, he's the biker. Like, you think that above all, he loved doing this?
Yeah, he lives in that part of the country. You know, he lives in Wyoming. He likes wide open spaces. He likes motorcycles, you know. He likes to go on the rides, of course. And at that time, two of the hottest things that were selling, two of the hottest products that were selling in the U.S. were cigars and motorcycles. I remember I was living in Florida at the time. If you were going to buy a new Harley Davidson, you had to have a one to trade in. You just couldn't walk in and buy a Harley Davidson at the time. At one point, they were the hottest pieces of commodity in the United States. So I think Eric not only liked the motorcycle trips and hanging around and riding them and that kind of thing, that he saw that he could bring a lot of money into the company because of them.
It's almost like you know, Buff or somebody trying to latch onto the NWO to try to, you know, obviously, you know, maybe Buff might be a bad example, but like somebody that wanted to latch onto the NWO to get like that vibe and get that off them. It's almost good of WWE, let's latch on to Harley Davidson and this huge show and kind of grab that vibe from them.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been great. I mean, you know, it would have opened up, you know, like you said, that some of the motorcycle people didn't know pro wrestling. They just knew Hulk. Well, maybe that would have been a good thing. You know, you give away a motorcycle. You know, there's all kinds of gimmicks they could have done with Harley Davidson, right?
Yeah.
Ride with the guys on the ride. There's so many sort of stuff they could have done. And there's another time that the North Tower dropped the ball that Eric was going to score a touchdown with.
So with this show and Bischoff, like the North Tower is good with like doing this for no gate and like, you know what I mean? Like they're good with Road Wild. They like it. They like the possibility of the sponsors. They like being attached to Harley Davidson.
Obviously. I mean, Harley Davidson back then, they were the hot thing, you know? I mean, you
I
go.
I just thought they might have a problem with like no gate. Like, hey, we're running a show. We're not making money at the gate. You know what I mean?
I think they understood what they're trying to do. Get a long-term deal with Harley Davidson, which would have meant a lot more than a one-time gate. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
So with this show, obviously we have Tanay, Heenan, and Shivani at the call. Who picks their outfits? Just curious. Do they pick it themselves? I mean, it's like utterly ridiculous what they're wearing.
I assume they picked it themselves.
I guess it's like almost jokey, a little bit of tongue in cheek with what they're doing, but it's like, wow, what the hell are these guys wearing? Like almost like, hey, look at these old guys wanting to be bikers.
Yeah, I think it was done tongue in cheek. You know what I mean? I think it was. So
Nash,
I think they did it for laughs, yeah.
So Nash is booking this, and where are you? You're home at this point?
Yeah, I'm home at this point.
Why? Why are you home?
Well, there was going to be a switch in the office. I was going to come back, and it was kind of. I didn't want to upset the apple cart. Kevin and I both knew I was going to take it, come back. Kevin was the one that suggested me come back and take it, and I needed some time, and. He was nice enough to say, okay, before I give it back, take some time off.
So Fit Finley's scheduled to be on this pay-per-view. He's supposed to fight like Jimmy Hart's first family, but he's not. Because remember we talked about last time when we were talking about Bash the Beach 99, he gets injured in that junkyard match. Remember he injures his leg. So no Fit Finley. That's a big loss.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. That's when he went through the table and got dropped for it.
Man, just that the idea of that junkyard match, it just seems like, I don't know, injuries waiting to happen, or I don't know, just didn't seem like a great idea as far as doing that junkyard match.
Yeah, but with the Nasty Boys, you could get hurt anytime, so it really didn't matter. Was a junker match or a church match. Could get hurt with them.
Yeah, that's true. Also, yeah. Medusa is supposed to fight Mona on this card, but it does not take place. No reason is given. It doesn't happen for some reason. So, Mona, of course, a.k.a. Molly Holly.
Yeah, I don't know either. I didn't ask, I guess, or maybe I did, but for some reason it didn't stick with me.
So Hogan, at this point, is back to the red and yellow. He made a big return on Nitro, where it's funny, like Nick Hogan was in the back, and, you know, Dad, you know, I want you to wear this again kind of thing. And they really kind of made a big deal about the return of red and yellow. Not a lot of fans, you know, were really watching at this point. I mean, WWF is killing WCW at this point. But did you think red and yellow, 1999, do you think that was the right move?
I mean, at this point, it didn't matter what anybody thought. He had creative control. And if you play that game... it's not the right thing to do. It's like you're a private in the army and you're wondering if the general's right. Doesn't matter, he's the general, right?
Yep.
Did I think it was right? No, but it didn't matter. He was going to do what he wanted to do.
You think they should have more build-up too, right?
Go ahead.
Maybe more build-up, too, right, to the red and yellow?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
maybe having like more buildup for
you,
like
you Brett broke up again.
Some more buildup for the red and yellow to return.
I guess this is like a rib. Yeah, you should have had some kind of buildup, but you know, who knows? Maybe he was in the trying to negotiate. Hogan's though was best and wanted to put the kid on. Maybe that, I don't know. You would think it would be a buildup.
What do you think about Hogan in 99 at this point, just in general? Do you think that time to pass the torch, he shouldn't be in main events? Like in your mind, like what are you thinking about him at this time?
Well, he was in a whole different ballgame. He's in a personal service contract to Ted Turner and a massive amount of money. What are you going to do, put him on the first match?
I don't know, but let's just say he's not, creative control doesn't exist or something. Like, obviously he's the biggest name in the history of the business, but would you still have him world champ? And like, as you see WWF, you know, where they are and where you guys are?
Why would you frustrate yourself?
What do you mean?
The question, what I mean is, why would you even think that way? When there's no, the answer is not going to be.
So you just go with the flow.
No, it's not that you go into the flow. It's somehow, when I talk about this situation, a lot of people don't understand this. His contract had nothing to do with wrestling. He was being paid to be the star of Ted Turner's TBS and TNT. He had complete control. How can you come up with, you can come up with what you think is right, but it's not going to happen. So you've wasted hours. So you better start thinking about what you can do to kind of soften the blow, or maybe have him go a different direction. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Because nobody else had a personal service to take Turner. Think about that. His ball players don't get that.
Yeah, it's true. I'm just thinking it's like 1999. WWF is kicking ass. WCW is like kind of on the downswing. It's almost like you might have to get a new influx of talent. But no, the main event is Hogan versus Nash again. I mean, I love the Hulkster. I mean, I think he's a god, but it would just been nice to maybe, I don't know, just spread the wealth a little bit here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I mean, I do definitely know what you mean. But then you'd get a call and you go to Ted's office and say, what are you doing? This guy's not a person. Think about this. Schmaltz, that whole group of pitchers that he had, Maddox, Schmaltz, we could go on the line, Murphy, Chipper Jones. None of them had a personal service contract except one guy.
You got to love it. And you got to deal with it, I guess.
Not that you got to deal with it, JP. That means that he thought he was the most important thing that he owned. Think about that. Nobody ever thinks about that.
Yeah, if he's the only one, yeah, for sure. He's obviously top priority.
Hank Aaron didn't have one. I'm trying to put this in perspective for people to see, hear what I'm saying. And a lot of it goes over people's heads. He was enamored by Hulk Hogan. The largest landowner in the United States, the guy that has the biggest buffalo herd, the gentleman that gave $1 billion to the United Nations, The guy that started cable TV just about, he was more enamored by Hulk Hogan than anybody that ever worked with him.
I don't blame him, to be honest. Hulk's the man, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, like, so he goes back to the red and yellow here in 99, but him and Nash are finally going to have this big match, and it's not going to be a feud. It's going to be a retirement match. You know what I mean? So it's going to be one and done here. He's going to retire, or Nash is going to retire. You like that stipulation, the retirement match? Because you know that their contracts aren't up. You know what I mean? Like, you know they're not, none of, neither one are going to really retire.
Well, do I like it? No. But 8,000 people, was it a week ago or 2 weeks ago, Sunday, went and saw a retirement match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you knew thing. You knew Flair was really retiring. This you know Hogan and Edge aren't retiring.
What? What did you just say?
Well, I think Flair's retiring. Why, you don't think Flair's going to retire?
No.
He's got more to tank?
What?
Flair has more. Dogs are brawling there. You think Flair has more in the tank?
I think that it was the second largest gate.
Yes.
Of all times, that wasn't a major company.
Yep.
And second largest pay-per-view of all times. Why would you drop it?
Yeah, Conrad's got to think of the next one. Maybe Hogan's last match, maybe, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot to do.
Hey, Flair's still drawing and 2022. It's pretty amazing.
Right.
So here on this show, to start it off, it's the Deadpool of the Insane Clown Posse Vampiro against Rey Mysterio Jr., Billy Kidman, and Eddie Guerrero. Pretty good match here as the Deadpool ends up losing. Kidman, Mysterio, and Eddie get the win. Raven was also at ringside with the Deadpool. Do you like just that faction? When I, like, just from saying, I know you weren't here at this point, but it's Violent J, Shaggy, two dub of Insane Clown Posse with Vampiro and Raven.
I'm not a big fan of rappers being wrestlers. And they're nice guys, but I'm just not a big fan. That's, and they did a pretty good job, but it's just, we're starting to slip a little bit more into the entertainment part.
And here, thank God, Mysterio, Kidman, and Eddie won, because I know sometimes WCW would have these, you know, celebrities go over, guys that shouldn't be win. To me, sometimes you see it. So it was good to see that ICP loses. But it's an interesting group with Vampiro and ICP and Raven. I know Raven would quit not that soon thereafter this, but pretty good little faction there.
Yeah, and Vampiro was very good. Just saw him recently. He looked terrific. I mean, he was one of the biggest draws of all times in Mexico.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it starts off with a pretty good match. Then we go to Harlem Heat, Booker T and Stevie Ray defeating Canyon and Bam Bam Bigelow for the WCW World Tag Team Championship. The match went about 13 minutes. Okay match here. Almost expected better, but it's interesting here. I don't know if Harlem Heat was particularly liked by this crowd, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'm sure they weren't. So, you know, it was very hard for them to work in front of that crowd, too, I'm sure.
Yeah. So they are the new tag team champions. Decent match is okay. They take it off of Canyon and Bigelow. With this, though, it was almost like start and stop with Booker T, because when you had the book, yes, they were tag team champions. They were a great chance. But then Booker T was separated, and he was kind of going his own way. Remember, he had that great feud with Benoit, the best of seven. He had that great feud with Rick Martel. He had a feud with Fifth Finlay. I mean, he became a single star. And here, they're putting him back in the tag division. I feel like almost like he passed it at this point. Why is he back in it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. at that point. I really don't. I thought he had made that leap. And his brother, to me, was a great performer, too. Who'd been, you know, you could have two single matches that would have been excellent.
Yeah, I just thought that it was, and which is a big complaint a lot of the young guys, that like, okay, they just put everybody back in the glass bubble, you know, they're in the glass ceiling and he won't be able to break through. It's like, Booker, you're getting a push, you know, TV title, like we're starting to give you a push, and then they send him back down the ladder to the tag titles. It just seemed like same old, where like the old guys, oh no, we're going to be the main event. And we're going to push Booker T, even though Booker T probably was one of the best in the roster, easily, maybe the best in the world. And he gets relegated back to the tag division.
Yeah, I wish I knew the answer to this. It might have been Kevin's thought that it's time to get some tag teams ready. And sometimes I thought they were one of the greatest tag teams of all times. Harlem Heat. I mean, they were excellent when they had Sherry. They were excellent.
Oh, no doubt about it. Absolutely. So the next matchup, the Revolution, Perry Saturn, Shane Douglas, and Dean Malenko defeated the West Texas Rednecks, Barry Windham, Kurt Hennig, Bobby Duncan Jr. with Kendall Windham in the corner. Match goes 11 minutes in the six-man tag. Decent match here. It was okay. I almost expected it to be a little bit better than what it was. What did you think about like Revolution as far as Saturn, Malenko, and Douglas, not getting a bigger push? Because I talked to Shane about this a bunch, and he said, yes, we'd beat the West Texas Rednecks, we're on our way up. Then they'd lose to the First Family, which was Jimmy Hart's faction, and they would be on the way down. Then they'd win, and then they'd lose. Like 50-50 booking, and it didn't make those guys look good. And those guys are going to be soon, especially Saturn and Malenko, wanting to depart because of the bad booking.
Yeah, I mean, they're great talent, great talent. I mean, again, I wish I could give you the definitive answer, but, you know, they're in a flux at that time period, WCW. So I wish I had the definitive answer. They were great talent, and we didn't use their talent as best as we could.
Now, I know you're not here at this point, but you probably still talk to Rick, very friendly with Rick, as far as being 1999. They want to bring in Shane, and he's told that he's going to feud with Ric Flair here in 99, and it doesn't happen. Rick, supposedly, according to Shane, and according to a few others as well, cut it short and said, nah, I don't want to feud with Shane Douglas. You know what I mean? He was talking shit about me and he wasn't on his level and all this other stuff. Did Rick ever say to you or anything like, I'm not working with this Shane Douglas guy?
No. But is Rick going to forget what Shane said about him? And Shane was pretty stiff on him, right?
Oh, yeah.
And he was just taking Paulie's word that Rick said that he would come to the bingo hall and wrestle him. Do you think WCW would allow Ric Flair to go to the bingo hall and wrestle Shane?
Not a chance. And Flair would never do it anyway, but not a chance.
Right. So.
And the thing that I mentioned this to Shane, but he kind of laughed it off almost, but Heyman was definitely lying to Shane at that point, because he was told that, Flair's coming in for three matches. I got him signed. And this is what Heyman is telling Shane. Three matches. You're going to beat him twice, and he's going to beat you once, but it's going to be 1-1 at first, and you're going to end up winning the third match. I mean, he had this whole storyline laid out to Shane that probably never really truly existed.
That Shane was going to beat Rick two out of three times?
Yes. Yep. That's what Shane said, according to Paul. But I said Paul was definitely making that up. He's like, I don't know, Rick reneged, but I think Paul just made it up, you know, possibly.
Well, how would WCW profit from that?
No idea. I don't know if this was when Rick was having an outs. Remember him and Bischoff were arguing, and he kind of sent him home, and Flair comes back, says, fire me, I'm already fired, that whole thing. So maybe he thought, because there was some issue with Bischoff and Flair, that maybe Flair would leave and come to ECW. But it seemed like Heyman had this whole elaborate plan, and Shane was like all on board for it. Like, oh, I'll wrestle Flair. Of course, this is great. You know, it will culminate in this big feud, and never happened.
This is just me. You're Eric Bischoff. You come to me and say that Ric Flair is going to lose our world title to ECW at a bingo hall to a guy that we don't have on contract. What do you think they would have said to Eric? They would have said, there's the door. There's the door. I mean, I was during that period pretty involved in the front office. Not that I heard everything, and not that they even wanted me to hear everything, but I think that one would have been hard to keep quiet.
Seemed like
has anybody else ever said? Is anybody like, have you talked to Nash or any of the guys? Maybe Taz or Paulie, Tommy Dreamer. I mean, wow. To me, that'd be hard for them to want to beat Ric Flair, as bad as they weren't getting along. That was still their emblem of their company. And to give it to somebody else, I don't see it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, a lot of the feud with Shane and Rick, where it's like, oh, he doesn't want to work with me after I said this stuff. I thought maybe we'd get some matches in ECW. Obviously, that was never going to happen. So, I'm in WCW. Maybe it'll happen. And here, at first, I mean, eventually, months down the line, they will have a little bit of a mini feud. But here in 99, Flair puts the old kibosh on that one. So Shane obviously is in the Revolution, and he's kind of in just six-man tags and stuff. He's just not separating himself from the group.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would have drawn money, Flair and Shane. They both would have cut great, great promos. They would have had solid, solid matches. But I kind of lean towards what you say, that Paulie kind of convinced Shane of the keys to the Rolls Royce when Paul didn't have the keys to the Rolls Royce yet.
So the next matchup, Buff Bagwell defeats Ernest the Cat Miller with Sonny Ono in about 7 minutes, 30 seconds. Okay match here. A lot of silliness and shenanigans, just because, you know, the bikers are going crazy and the cat's trying to talk on the mic and they cut him off, you know, revving the engine and stuff. So it was just, I don't know. It is what it is. It's kind of a nothing match. It wasn't that great. I guess just to get Buff a win on pay-per-view and hopefully have him climb the ladder again and give him a little bit of a push. But really nothing to write home about here as far as the cat and Buff Bagwell.
Right, right.
So then we have a no disqualification match for the WCW United States Championship. Chris Benoit defeats Diamond Dallas Page in 12 minutes. Easily match of the night. Great match. Benoit is unbelievable, but these two have just great chemistry. He defends his United States Championship. He wins. He beats DDP, who's pretty high up on the card here. So, to me, definitely match of the night. This was great. Benoit and DDP, man, they're both great.
Yeah, they had super chemistry together. They really did. They really did. Real good intensity. And it didn't surprise me that they had the match of the night.
The only thing I didn't get about it was like no DQ. It didn't really need to be no DQ, you know, especially with those two. Just, and it didn't fit because they didn't really use that stip too much in the match.
And you're right, but I think they were just trying to kind of make that fit because of the surroundings in, Sturgis, you know what I mean? Tough town. They knew it was going to be a hard-hitting match. Let's throw this on. Maybe draw a couple of extra buy rates.
So the next match, Sid Vicious in a one-on-one match defeats Sting in about 11 minutes. Oh, I was reading some reviews online. So the match wasn't that good. The match is actually pretty good. I mean, I like the chemistry with Sid and Sting here. And Sid basically kind of beats him straight up, really. So a big win here for Sid as he kind of is getting pushed. I thought this was a pretty damn good match. Sid and Sting always had pretty good chemistry, even going back many years.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think Sid's best matches were with Sting, don't you?
Up there. He's had some good ones. Maybe WWF, he's had some good ones like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart and stuff. But probably Sting was one of his better opponents.
Yeah, I think he was the best opponent. And so, yeah, and Sid's presentation to me was very, very good with Sting.
Do you think that the big monster heel defeating the franchise of WCW, you know, like this big baby face, him beating him clean, do you think that hurt Sting at all or no?
No, Sting was over. By that, you're going to have to – I go back to boxing. I go back to UFC. Didn't Conor McGregor lose? Didn't Ali lose?
Oh, yeah.
Even though I had Goldberg undefeated, you can't be undefeated forever. But the way Goldberg got beat could have been done a little bit different. But, I mean, it doesn't hurt anybody to do a job. I mean, Rick's done 17 of them, right?
He's been at least 6 times.
Yeah, at least.
He used to always joke around he had a losing record.
Yeah.
So then the next match, Goldberg defeats Rick Steiner in about 6 minutes. Pretty good little match here, too. I love the way Goldberg spears. I mean, not there's much to the match, but I just love the way Goldberg spears Rick Steiner. I mean, it just seems like a train wreck. You know, just he nails him with the spear.
Yeah, yeah. And for 6 minutes, they did what they should have done. And Steiner did a hell of a job.
Then we have Macho Man Randy Savage defeating Dennis Rodman in about 11 minutes, 30 seconds here. It's actually not a bad match. I mean, it probably didn't really need to be maybe 11 minutes. Maybe that might be a little long, but it gets out of control. There's a porta potty involved. So it's really not that bad, but it's crazy. I guess you still had Rodman for one last match. So, hey, let's throw him out there with Macho Man. Just pretty cool just to think about. It's like, wow, Macho Man versus Rodman. Like, wow.
Yeah, and they liked one another. Randy liked Dennis. And Dennis was a nice guy. I got along very well with Dennis. And he got along with everybody. He was a very nice guy. And, think back during their championship run. He let him off for practice, right? Phil let him off for practice. Where is he? Oh, he's wrestling tonight. You know, so pretty crazy. But, I think that was the best match Dennis ever had.
Yeah, it very well could be because they're kind of not threw it together randomly. But, you know, you're in there with Macho Man and, you know, you're probably going to have a decent match. This is like almost like silly. It gets a little crazy at points, but it was pretty good. And I thought it was fun. I liked it.
I think you're dead on. I think you're dead on.
Do you know anything? Like, did they have one more match left on his contract? Like, it seemed like he just came back randomly here.
Dennis, from what I could gather, could come back when he wanted to come back. And if Hogan wanted him, he would call him up. I think on this one, I'm assuming that Randy said, oh, I don't really have anything going with anybody. Let me call Rodman, you know. That's what I see anyway.
So then we have the main event of the evening. Hulk Hogan, like we mentioned before, returning to the red and yellow like he did on Nitro. So the Hulkamania, the Hulkster, he's back. He defeats Kevin Nash in about 12 minutes in the retirement match for the title. What do you think here? Remember, we had been talking about they didn't have the real match. Remember, they had the finger poke of doom. They, you know, they obviously didn't have the the real one-on-one match, but now they finally have it, and Hulk is going over and retiring Kevin Nash.
Don't understand that, do you?
I don't know. I guess because he's red and yellow, he's Hulkamania again. He's the giant slayer or whatever. He's the dragon slayer. He could beat giants, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, he's back to the immortal Hulk Hogan days.
I'm just assuming that's what it is, JP. I mean, that match was how many years too late?
Yeah, yep, definitely a few years too late. Nash gives him the powerbomb. He no-sells, so we're back to the him no-selling finishers and gets up and kind of destroys Nash. But like you said, like the finger poke of doom was like the only other match technically that they were supposed to have at that point.
Right, and it was 2 years too late. That train had left the station.
What did you think about, like, okay, Hogan goes over, but Nash leaves. He's going to take some time off. He'll be back, but he's going to take some time off. Do you think that that's, I don't know, if you're, like, looking at it, it's like, okay, Hogan, and you know, not Nash is a young guy, but he retired one of the younger guys, and he's going to continue on with Hulkamania, and it's 1999, and Steve Austin's kicking ass over in WWF. You know what I mean? Like, shouldn't maybe Nash be getting more of an ascension and less of Hogan? I mean, it just seems like we might be going in the wrong direction here.
Yeah, you're right. I think we are. I mean, we should have been focusing on the young guys. And like I said, this match is 2 years too late. So the wheels are starting to come off the bus. And I told you, you can make mistakes, but you can't make too many. And we all started making many mistakes.
So Hogan beats Nash and retires him here at the end of Road Wild 99. Like I said, Savage beat Rodman. Goldberg beats Rick Steiner. Sid Vicious beats Sting. Benoit defeats DDP. I mean, the names are there, though. I mean, if you look at it, like, wow, what a card as far as names. Some of the match quality wasn't great, and obviously the ambiance, the venue, they didn't really get into some of the matches either, which hurts it. But just overall, kind of talking about it, would you say the show was okay? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle? Like, what did you think about the show?
Middle. It didn't do anything to push the company forward. We stayed idle. Vroom, 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 vroom. I think it'd be best summed up with the motorcycle cranked up. That's it.
Yeah, well said, Road Wild there, yeah. So, you know, decent show. It wasn't great by any stretch. It was probably better than the last show when we were talking about Bash at the Beach 99. But, you know, it is what it is at this point, but well said. But let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check the website, tmptempire.com. And, of course, you go to Pro Wrestling Tees, ProWrestlingTees.com, and visit the Kevin Sullivan store. You can follow Kevin on Instagram at Taskmaster Talks. Kevin, what else you got going on? Anything good?
And as I've been plugging, Old School Ring Squared. You can get it on Instagram at Ring Squared. You can get it email. You can get it on Facebook. So it's kind of taken off in the last few weeks, and there's been some noise about maybe doing something with it as a series. So hopefully something, if the people buy it and read it, we can discuss it, because I discussed it last week when I was in Charlotte.
So, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Thank you, everybody, for listening. See you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. We'll be right back. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.